In recent days, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki decided to step down in favor of the person nominated to be the next prime minister, Haider al-Abadi. For some perspective on all of this, in light of the Islamic State insurgency, VOA's Carl Castiel spoke with two analysts. Edmund Garib is professor and Mustafa Barzani scholar for Global Kurdish Studies at American University. Faisal Itani is resident fellow at the Atlantic Council's Rafiq Hariri Center for the Middle East. Here's Carol Castiel.
Well, Edmund Garib, let me begin with you. Now that Prime Minister Maliki has agreed to step aside, what does this mean for the current state of affairs, both in trying to contain and thwart the onslaught of ISIS and for the possibility of a more inclusive government?
Before I answer that question, I would like to point out one thing. I want to say that you were one of the few journalists, and your program was one of the few programs which focused on the plight of minorities in the Middle East. All people, for example, have suffered in Iraq. Sunnis, Shia, Turkmen, Kurds, Christians, Alawis. But I think the minorities suffered more, not necessarily because of what happened to them or there were more of them who suffered, but because of their small numbers in the area. And some of these ethnic and religious minorities faced and are facing extinction, like the Sabaean community probably will be finished in Iraq. The Christians, who are one of the oldest Christian communities in the world, for that matter, not just in the Middle East. Going back to the first century AD, their numbers went down from 1.1, 1.2 million. If there are 300,000 left, that would be a large number. And I want to say that you were one of the few, actually, early on who realized, and that I think credit should be given where credit is due.
Well, thanks to you for helping us talk about these communities and their plight. It's a two-way street.
Thank you. But the point that you mentioned about Prime Minister Maliki, I think this is a very significant development. And not necessarily because I expect that Iraq's problems are going to end or that there will not be challenges before this government, but I think where the change is that Maliki was moving in the direction of a dead end. And Iraq was going almost to the edge of the abyss, if it wasn't already. But I think right now there is a new opportunity. There is a chance. There are some signs that maybe some of the Iraqi leaders with help from abroad, and they are becoming aware of the dangers to themselves and to the country as a whole, and therefore are making some steps that are probably going to help promote more understanding. And if we see a government, not only a government of national unity, but a real government that's going to be representative of all of Iraq's communities, be they Sunni, be they Shia, be they Turkmen, be they Kurd, I think that's going to be very significant. Taking into account the realities on the ground, there's, however, another problem, and this is the need for structural reform of the Iraqi government. Unless there is a structural reform, we're going to have a big, big problem down the road, because as long as people think of themselves as Sunnis and Shias and Kurds and Turkmen and Christians and Yazidis or whatever, that is a problem. And the problem also goes back to some of the decisions made after the invasion of Iraq in 2003, when Iraqis were dealt with as communities rather than also as Iraqis. And one of the most important things, the policies which were followed led to the Lebanonization of Iraq. And we are paying the price for it today.
Turning to you, Faisal Itani, Edmund Garib brings up so many important points. The fact that Iraq is a country that is made up of so many communities, Christian, there were Jews, Yazidis, not only Muslims of Shia and Sunni sects, and how to get back to this sense of unity of the Iraqi identity, and to what extent does Maliki's decision to step aside perhaps help get us toward that? How significant is his departure and the nomination of Haider al-Abadi?
I think his agreement to give up the post of the premiership helped avoid violence within Baghdad and between the rival Shia communities, first and foremost. So that has removed the potentially greatly complicating factor on the road to reform and an outreach to the other communities in the country. I do share Edmond's concern that I think Maliki is himself a problem in the way he's governed and manipulated the Iraqi institutions, but also think obviously the problem with Iraq's politics and their dysfunction runs a lot deeper than that. It's the nature of governance, the structure of the state itself, and their relationships with the communities that are not as heavily represented as the Shia political establishment in Baghdad. So it's disaster avoidance, but I certainly don't call it a solution, no.
Well, back to you, Edmund Gharib. To look at the other aspects of trying to contain and reverse ISIL's advance, what is your assessment of the impact and the effect of the U.S. strategy of these airstrikes, the stepped-up support for the Kurdish militia, the Peshmerga, and, of course, the attempts to try to protect the minority Yazidi population?
This is something that's very complex. On the one hand, President Obama was very careful about sending military support to the Iraqi government. And part of the reason why I think he did that was primarily because he wanted to put pressure on Prime Minister Maliki to either change his policies and the direction in which he was taking Iraq, but also to perhaps put pressure so that others would also come to the decision that maybe it's time for Mr. Maliki to leave the scene as Prime Minister of Iraq. Nevertheless, this creates a lot of problems. First, on the American level, President Obama was the president who was elected to a large extent because he promised to get the American forces out of Iraq, because he argued the decision to go to war was a wrong decision. This is also a slippery slope, whereby you begin to send forces. Yes, this was a humanitarian crisis. There was a failure on the part of the various powerful forces on the ground to move to help the Yazidis and the Christians and others. But at the same time, there is a need to confront this extremist organization. But I think probably the best way would be first to get the Iraqis themselves, to provide them with the support, to get a government of national unity, a government that's going to represent all Iraqis, and a government that's going to look at this threat as a threat to all Iraqis, provide them with military, diplomatic support is probably the best way, and also get the United Nations in. That's probably the best way to move, rather than to begin to put boots on the ground, because that is not going to be seen as part of the solution, but as a part of the problem.
Turning to you, Faisal Itani, for your assessment of the U.S. role so far, the airstrikes, the support particularly to the Peshmerga forces as well as to Baghdad, that's certainly not nearly enough, but how do you see the U.S. role going forward?
Let me take a slightly different angle on how I see the motivations and the trajectory of the policy. I think the humanitarian aspect was not non-existent, but a secondary factor in the decision to intervene to the extent to which the United States has. I believe this was a gradual realization that the ISIS problem and their military momentum had gotten out of hand, and that something needed to be done to shore up the Kurdish position and, if you will, contain the Islamic State, not defeat it. There was, of course, the benefit that beleaguered refugees were rescued, but if that were the criteria for U.S. action, then I would indeed be worried about a slippery slope, because there are so many people in grave danger in both Iraq and Syria. I think President Obama has been extremely disciplined about it. I don't think this will turn into the sort of broad humanitarian intervention. If it hasn't already over the past 3 years, I don't think it will do so now. I think the policy will continue to be one of containment while Iraq gets its house in order, if indeed it does. The president's view is that taking it much further beyond that is probably an overly ambitious policy, given the realities on the ground. The problem is this indicates a real mismatch of ambition between the Islamic State and what they're trying to achieve and what the United States is willing and able to do as the president sees it. ISIS can live with a containment strategy. They're a state-building organization before anything else. And as long as they're able to consolidate control of territory, resources, and protect their lines of communication, they're perfectly happy for the situation to stay as it is in Iraq. Indeed, they are actually expanding westwards into Syria and making dramatic gains there.
That is Faisal Itani, a resident fellow at the Atlantic Council's Rafiq Hariri Center for Middle East Studies. He and Edmund Gharib, professor, and Mustafa Barzani, scholar for Global Kurdish Studies at American University, spoke with VOA's Carol Castiel, who hosts our program, Encounter. To hear more of their conversation, you can go to our website, voanews.com, and look for Encounter under the Programs tab.